This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Last week, Frank and Douglas showed their appreciation to Ruby for her act of kindness in fronting their covert relationship. But their very happiness as they showered her and young Edie with gifts only served to accentuate Ruby's loneliness.
Mr. Peterson opened Frank's door with the aplomb of a butler as they came through the gate.
"Time for the grand entrance," said Douglas,
scooping Ruby off her feet and pretending to stagger.
"Crikey, it's like lifting a bale of hay."
In the spirit of things, Ruby hit his shoulder playfully with her fist, giving an artificial little laugh as he manoeuvred her sideways through the doorway. "Rotter!" Behind her, Edie giggled and clapped, while Madam waited, patiently demure, for the crossing of the threshold.
"I see we're going to have to feed you up and look after you," Douglas said,
bouncing Ruby in his arms down the passage toward the sitting room. This theatrical gesture, his carrying her like this, made the whole day seem more wrong than ever. The smell of sausage rolls warming in the oven filtered up the passage, nauseating her. "They won't burn, will they?" Ruby struggled to get out of his arms.
"Vi's taken command of the kitchen," he said,
putting her down just before the sitting room door.
"Oh, Lord," groaned Ruby.
Frank's voice rang out.
"Here they are."
The small gathering applauded, and the tea shower cloth was whipped away from the food. Earlier in the day, Douglas and Frank had made fancy-looking sandwiches, which had been covered with damp mutton cloth to keep them fresh. Vi appeared from the kitchen bearing a tin plate piled with the sausage rolls and a dinner plate with savouries on it. The fire had not yet warmed the room. Janice added a few pine cones. It was like a scene in a film, not real at all. Edie ran past the feast to throw her arms around Douglas's waist and looked up at him.
"You don't ever have to leave now, do you?"
"No, dear. I never have to leave."
Vi's lips pursed and she wagged her head.
"Except," said Frank, "when he ventures off to sell brushes in the deep, dark hinterland. But he'll always return, Tink."
"Those are my deviled eggs," Janice said, to no one in particular. "Ruby's inspiring me to cook. I got the recipe from a magazine."
"Has anyone put the kettle on?"
Vi started for the kitchen again.
"Hang on," said Frank. "Champagne."
"Oh, in that case..."
Vi turned back. Madam declined a glass.
"Please excuse me. I must go. I wish blessings on you all, and this house."
She shook hands with Mr. Peterson and Vi, and gave both Frank and Douglas a kiss and a brief embrace. Kissing Ruby's face twice, she whispered,
"I wish God's strength on you, Eda Shurime. I'll see you on Monday morning." "But every bride needs a few days to herself. Drink champagne while you can. The bubbles do not last."
As soon as everyone had gone, Ruby took off the chartreuse skirt and put it on a coat hanger. It had looked well on her. She got into the warm, itchy trousers she preferred. A long piece of scarlet silk she'd found served as a belt, cinched tight. The house was quiet. The men had shut their door. They were probably in there, celebrating in their own way. The sitting room had been tidied, and the records had been put away. Edie lay sprawled out on the floor in front of the fire with a book.
"Janice did the dishes before she left," she said.
Ruby put a few carbonettes on the fire and sat on the floor next to her. Blue sprouts of flame licked the black lumps of fuel. Red embers began to catch, a dance of living blue on black and red. "Shall I make scrambled eggs and toast for your tea?" said Ruby.
"I'm full," Edie said, stretching her legs out on the hearth rug. "I had at least 4 sausage rolls and some sandwiches, and..."
"I packed some bits away for your lunch tomorrow."
"Not the devil's eggs Janice made, though,"
Edie scowled. "Deviled eggs, silly." Ruby put an arm around her and pulled her close. "They were very good. Did you try them?"
"No, they looked funny."
Toasting herself in front of the fire with Edie seemed, at that moment, the finest thing in the world. "I noticed you talking to Mr. Peterson. You made him smile. What were you talking about?"
"Books mostly," said Edie. "Do you realize, Mum, I haven't read the whole real book of Alice in Wonderland yet? Mr. Peterson knows a lot about a lot of books, even more than Frank."
"He does he?" Douglas appeared, his collar turned up and his shoulders damp. He stepped over their legs and held his hands in front of the fire.
"Oh, it's drizzling out there. Where's Frank?"
"I thought you were both in your room," said Ruby.
"Our room?"
A brief expression of bewilderment was replaced by a grin.
"Yes, it is. Our room."
"Where on earth did you go at this time of night?" said Ruby.
Popped out on a secret mission."
He tapped the side of his nose, his eyes dancing from Ruby to Edie.
"Here I am."
Frank came through from the passage, a polished wooden box under his arm.
"Quite a day, wasn't it?"
Douglas seated himself on the edge of the nearest armchair.
"And we have presents for both of you. I'll go first."
He handed Ruby a Moroccan leather-bound box.
"Ruby, this is a sort of wedding present. Well, an appreciation present. To show how much we appreciate what a splendid girl you are."
She flipped the lid back and gasped. A watch gleamed gold in the blood-coloured box.
"It's self-winding. Automatic," he said. "You never have to wind it. And I thought a waterproof..."
"No, I can't. I don't deserve this. It must have cost a fortune."
"Please, don't be silly about it."
His hand caressed her shoulder.
"Put it on," said Frank. "I'm sure the strap's the right size."
It was. The words, "thank you," seemed inadequate. She angled her wrist to the light, admiring the easily read watch face. Swiss made.
"I hope you don't mind. I took the liberty of having it engraved."
On the reverse side, in tiny lettering, "All our love, Frank and Douglas." A lump caught in her throat.
Do put it back on, said Frank tenderly. You need a watch, and a watch like that needs to be worn.
Your movement keeps it going, Douglas said.
She needed a watch, but they shouldn't have. She wished they hadn't. But it did look good on her. Thank you, she said quietly.
Douglas fished in his pocket. And, dear Edie, this is for you.
Edie took the small, gilt-etched box and opened it slowly. She squealed.
A locket! Look, Mum, a gold locket! Oh, dear Uncle Douglas!
And she threw her arms around his neck.
Steady on, Frank laughed. You'll have him strangled.
Thank you, uncles, Edie shrieked. This is the best thing ever.
Your very own keepsake, Frank said, fastening the clasp around her neck.
I'm going to look at it in the mirror.
Edie's voice faded as she left the room.
And now, Ruby, said Frank, come up to the table. This is yours too.
He patted the top of a handsome, dark wooden box and stepped back, beaming. It was the sort of box women used for jewellery. She held her breath, running her forefinger across the inlaid mother-of-pearl motifs on the lid.
Open it, Frank ordered.
She turned the brass key and lifted the lid. At one glimpse of the contents, she let it fall closed and looked at him.
You can't mean it.
Why not?
Frank's amusement rattled her.
But why?
Her voice, thin and distant, not hers at all. Frank put his arm around her.
Look at them when you're ready, he said. They're all yours.
I don't understand, Ruby murmured.
Frank and Douglas stood there together, hip to hip, arm in arm.
Mother knew all about us, said Frank. She loved Douglas as much as she did me. We spent time together when she was with us. Then that viper next door.
The muscle in his jaw pulsed and his lips thinned. Douglas put his head to Frank's shoulder.
Now, now.
Frank nodded.
I know Mother would be grateful to you, Ruby, for giving us the chance to be happy. Isn't that right, Dougie? Rosalind was an exceptional lady, Douglas said. The best of human beings.
He turned to Frank, adding,
Don't you think Ruby's very like her?
They looked at one another, then at Ruby.
I don't know. Can she sing? Said Frank. Your mother had a voice like Gally Corchi, said Douglas. There's a record here somewhere.
Ruby closed the box. The banter between them embarrassed her. Frank released Douglas and sat down next to her and put his hand on hers.
I know Mother would have loved you. Please accept it, Ruby. What else am I going to do with any of it? I think some of the pieces in there may suit you. I hope so. You don't seem to wear jewellery, said Douglas. I told Frank I wasn't sure if...
Frank reopened the box.
Some of this stuff's quite good. Father was an unpleasant bastard, but he didn't stint when it came to buying Mother pretty things to make up for it.
I don't know what to say.
When she looked up, the two men were gazing at her, smiling, pleased with themselves. The hinged trays were lined with blue velvet and held several pairs of earrings and rings, rather jumbled, and a small Morocco box. She didn't open it. The tray underneath was filled with tangled strings of beads, some glass and others brilliant gems of various colours, mixed up with brooches and bracelets. Two narrow velvet boxes might contain pearls, or something that might be expensive, or not. She knew of men who tried to impress women with fine boxes that looked more expensive than the jewellery in them. She didn't want to look now. The untidiness of the assortment was curious. Perhaps Mrs. Pierce didn't care for them. If most of them were gilt gifts from an unfaithful husband, that would explain it. She lowered the lid.
"Go through it later," Frank said.
"Yes," she said. There'd better not be an expectation to express appreciation by showing up to breakfast wearing Mrs. Pierce's diamantes, or something equally ridiculous. But you never know. She had a lot to learn about these two. Edie returned, grinning, and fingering the gold locket at her neck, her eyes fixed on the closed box with its brass key.
"How now, Tink?" Frank said cheerily. "We haven't forgotten you. Where's Tink's very special present, Douglas?"
"I can hardly believe it," Edie said sleepily. "Can you hear it purring?"
"Yes, it's like an engine. Just as well it's settled down." The kitten's mewing had almost driven Ruby mad. "Don't squeeze it. It may want to go to the toilet again."
"I'm going to call it Wendy. Will Wendy remember where the box of sand is?"
"It's a boy. And it had bloomin' well better remember where to go. Now go to sleep. It's late. School tomorrow."
"In that case, I'll call him Percy. Percy's a good name for a grey cat."
"Go to sleep, or I'll put it in the wash house for the night. Good night, my darling."
"Good night, Mum."
A second of faint purring passed before Edie sat up.
"Hang on. Who's going to look after Percy while I'm at school?"
"Frank, I suppose."
"But what if Percy falls in love with Frank?"
"I'm sure as long as you don't squeeze him to death, Percy'll love both of you. But you'd better make sure you're the one to feed him, like Frank said, so Percy will love you best. Now go to sleep." Edie's voice was a whisper under the bedclothes.
"Percy. Dear, dear Percy. I love you, Percy. And your sandbox is by the wardrobe, Percy. Oh, my very own. My darling Percy."
"Oh, Frank. Ta very bloody much." Ruby cussed under her breath, tossed herself over, and pulled the eiderdown over her ears. The following weekend, Frank commandeered Edie's time. Douglas, unsure what else to do, mowed the lawn and played patience. Ruby had chores to do, while Frank taught Edie to recite poems. In the evenings, the four of them played old board games, a honeymoon period of sorts, and Frank was just as likely to put a sudden stop to an activity and retreat to his room. Ruby saw how Edie watched him closely for signs. It hadn't taken her long to learn when to be quiet. After a week and a half of Janice asking, begging for Ruby to go to the pictures with her, Ruby finally agreed to leave Edie with Douglas the following Friday night. There had been no sightings of Lou Watkins. Perhaps he'd gone. It was too soon for Ruby to shut down her radar. If only she could shake off that fear. She was tired of it. Light-hearted distraction was what she needed. Throughout the film, Janice elbowed her in the ribs every time Audrey Hepburn wore another hat, with whispered cries of,
Oh, how gorgeous!
In the saddest moment of the story, when the lovers thought they had to part, Janice had rivulets of tears glistening on her face. Only by concentrating on Janice's silvery profile was Ruby able to prevent herself from crying too. This was a ridiculous place to let go of accumulated grief that might be waiting for the smallest crack to force its way through. There'd be no stopping it. Why now, after years of pain locked inside her and her eyes parched dry, unable to produce one tear? Were films like that made so people could have a good cry in the dark, keeping the real reasons for their tears secret? Ruby put a hand to her neck, pretending a lump was not sitting in her throat, commanding herself not to give in. On their way back to the car, Janice linked arms with her. "Did you see? Her haircut was just like yours. I knew it. By the way, it could do with another trim. Let me know when you'd like it done. Oh, I'd love to ride a motor scooter like Audrey Hepburn had. Don't you think Gregory Peck looks just like Frank?"
"No," said Ruby.
What was it about Janice that simultaneously lightened Ruby's heart and filled it? "I'll never have a honeymoon," Janice mused as she drove. "But I'd love to go to Rome. I wonder if I ever will. Go to Rome, I mean. Doesn't it feel a bit odd, though? My tearing you away from your honeymoon?"
"Don't be so silly," Ruby said. "You've no idea just what I needed."
She couldn't explain what was hardly clear to herself. Even after an idiotic film, her uneasy tension remained, as though she was walking on a knife edge.
"What will Douglas be doing?" said Janice.
"Probably playing backgammon with Frank and listening to the radio. I just hope they remember Edie's bedtime."
"We could go out regularly, couldn't we?"
"It's a bit early to take Douglas too much for granted."
"I suppose," Janice said. "We'll see," said Ruby, when they reached Frank's place. "You won't mind if I don't ask you in for a drink, will you? I don't know what I'll find when I get in."
Janice kissed her. This time the flicker of warmth radiated through Ruby's belly.
"Night-night, honey bun," said Janice.
"See you Monday."
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.